The first half of The Walking Dead Season 7 is over, but we're just getting started here on The Walking Dead Post Show Recap. And now, here are the two guys who love carbs even more than Negan. I'm Rob Sisterner. Here's Josh Wigler. Josh, how are you?
Oh my God, is it all of those carbs' fault that I have such big guts?
Is that it?
That might be it.
Yeah,
here,
Spencer's
let's find
got
out.
A great
let's check
diet.
Out. Oh, God. Yep, I've got guts. They're pretty big. Let me put them back in.
Put them back in. Anyway, yes. Josh, after a extended break to talk about this episode, here we are finally to get into the Walking Dead first half of the season feedback.
I think the episode was just so massive and monumental that we needed like a 2 week stop down to really wrap our heads around it. It was just too much to bear in the immediate aftermath of this episode airing that we really had to gather our thoughts, pull ourselves together, Rob, and now we are finally ready to stand against this episode of The Walking Dead in our feedback show.
Finally. Yeah. Yes. For those of you guys who follow the other podcasting and reporting that Josh and I do on Survivor, we had a very busy week with the Survivor finale last week, and then I also was dealing with a bout of the laryngitis, Josh.
Oh my God, do we want to blame the pigs for that? Are they responsible for this virus as well?
No. Don't blame anybody for that. But so here we are now, ready to go. Just days before the holiday season, the most Walking Dead time of the year.
Days before the holiday season, and yes, a little bit of time since the finale, but I gotta say, Rob, that this is actually great timing for me to be doing a Walking Dead podcast with you.
Why is that?
It just so happens that we are recording this as I am in the middle of a pretty fun Walking Dead assignment that maybe we can talk through a little bit here.
Okay, perfect. What are you working on?
Okay, so one of the things we're doing, you know, part of my day job, I do writing for The Hollywood Reporter. We're doing, you know, it's the end of the year, slow time of news, Rob. It's always a great time for lists and rankings and fun stuff and such. And in that regard, I am working on something that I've wanted to do for a while, have never officially done. But I am posting this week. It might be out by the time you're listening to this, or maybe it's just a few hours away. My official rankings of the best characters on The Walking Dead.
Yes. Okay. And this is on the heels of your Game of Thrones list?
Yes. So I already ranked the top 30 characters from Game of Thrones, and I am giving the same treatment to Walking Dead right now. So I'm all in on Walking Dead. This whole day has been Walking Dead for me already, Rob, and it will be long after we are done recording this show.
Okay, perfect. Now, is this top characters of all time or top characters currently alive here at mid-season point of season 7?
I mean, what's so distressing about that question is that you have to ask it, because there could very well be like 700 characters still alive on the show right now. That's just how big the cast of The Walking Dead has become. No, the field is wide open, Rob. Anyone who has been on the show, had meaningful impact, has died. Maybe even some of these characters you would argue do not have the same impact that I think that they have. If they've been on the show and they are no longer on the show, they still apply for the list of the top 30 characters from The Walking Dead, in my book at least.
Okay. So can you give us any spoilers?
Well, I guess the big spoiler is, you know, there's only 30 spots on here. So you're not going to be able to get every single person on here. Certainly there, you know, it really does feel like there's been 1,000 series regulars on The Walking Dead. And there are certainly more than 30 main speaking characters. So there are a couple of snubs on here. Do you have any guesses of anybody who might not even crack the 30?
Whoa, who could be a speaking character on The Walking Dead and not crack the top 30?
There are a couple of people who are, you know, who count as series regulars, and certainly a couple of people who have been in the opening credits sequence even that I have not included on.
Oh, wow. In the opening credits even.
Drawing a line in the sand.
Yeah. And they're still alive on the show.
One of them is, yes. One of them is indeed still alive on the show.
You can't still be this hard on Father Gabriel, can you?
Oh, no. I will spoil that Father Gabriel did make the list. He is currently clocking in at number 28. I wrote up for Father Gabriel. If this list had been conceived during season 6, Father Gabriel wouldn't even crack the list. But 8 episodes into season 7, the reformed coward has emerged as a surprise MVP contender, standing strong alongside his true allies, volunteering for night watches, creeping the heck out of Negan. You get the picture. For someone who used to be one of the show's most loathed characters, Gabriel's star is certainly on the rise.
How about Heath? Is he in the credits?
Heath is, I don't think that he was ever a main series regular, but no, Heath is still somewhere languishing on the Heathcliff, has not cracked the top 30.
Okay. Let's see. What about Gregory? Is he in?
No, Gregory. If Xander Berkeley was playing George Mason and he somehow wandered into The Walking Dead, I would have to put him probably at like number one. But since it's not the same character, no, I think Gregory still has a ways to go before he cracks the list. No Dwight here either, I will spoil.
Yes.
My heart is not warmed up enough to Dwight at this point to put him in the top
30. Well, I was going to even suggest Sherry, being in the top 30.
Sherry's out. No Sherry. Wow. No Sherry's berries here today.
Wow. Okay. So who is it? Who is the big reveal that is the headline did not make the list?
Well, so this person is not on the list, but family members of this person, and really these people, two of the four Grimes family members did not make the cut. And that would be Carl and Lori. Carl and Lori are not in the top 30. I'm leaving them out.
That's a real hot take.
For a couple of reasons.
Yeah. One, you have a Little Ass Kicker has made the top 30.
Little Ass Kicker is number 30 on the board. Baby Judith, there's no better way to kick off this list than with the aptly nicknamed Little Ass Kicker. Unlike the rest of the cast, Judith's entire life has been surrounded by the apocalypse. She is literally a baby, and yet she somehow cries less than everyone else in her family. When Walking Dead enters its 27th season in 2036, I fully expect Judith to be the very best character on the board.
So why did Carl not make the top 30 for you? Is it because you hate his hair? Is that what it is?
I don't love the hair, but have you been watching The Walking Dead? I mean, if you think about how many people there actually are on the show, and I know that there are big defenders of Carl that exist, of Carl, and I think that he is a good butt of a joke, and he has had a moment or two, but much more often than not, I feel like they've really dropped the ball with this character. And I just think that there's at least 30 characters that I enjoy more than Carl.
Wow. I feel like that's a super hot take, scorching take.
I think it's a pretty hot take. I mean, like Dr. Jenner from the CDC is on here and Carl's not on here. So I don't know. Maybe this is just me trying to stir the pot of chocolate pudding and raise people's, ire. But there's going to be no Carl on this list. Maybe that's controversial. I like the controversy. I'm good with that.
OK. All right. Well, you are walking right into it. An angry beehive of all of the Carl fans.
Yeah. Well, at least Enid's not on here either. Then it would really be a problem.
Yeah. You can't put Enid. You couldn't combine them and have like Keenid.
No, I mean, I did combine. Lizzie and Mika made the list, but there's no Carl.
Wow.
They are one spot ahead of Baby Judith as it stands at 29. So I have a tie on here, but that's the only tie that I'm going to have.
Okay.
And no complaints that there's no Lori. You're not upset that Lori is missing from the list?
No, I feel like that, you know, she's been gone for four seasons now. I think that, I mean, it's probably a hotter take that you have somebody from the CDC who was in one episode. You know, no, I think a lot of people were down on Lori during her short time with us, but we've had much more Walking Dead without Lori at this point than Walking Dead with Lori.
And I think when she was on the show, I think that she was often sort of just like the object of people's fury. She was not a character that was super beloved. So I don't know. You know, I don't think that it's majorly controversial to leave her out, but maybe it is controversial.
Controversial. Yeah.
Herschel's doing just fine. Who would you guess are the top three on the board?
Top three. I think you have to go Rick, right?
Well, just tell me who you think the top three are.
I feel like that some combination of Rick, Carol, and Daryl.
Okay, great. Fantastic. Okay. No spoilers in how that shakes out, but that is the top three. I feel like that's fairly hard to argue against.
That's probably it. I mean, those are like
the Triforce. That's the Triforce of The Walking Dead.
Yeah. And I think then it was sort of like debatable who was number four after that, whether you wanted to have it be Glenn. Like we've talked about the Mount Rushmore of Walking Dead.
I have a very controversial number four and I will leave it at that.
Controversial?
It's not Herschel, but it is controversial.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Herschel, I feel like, is reasonably placed, but I feel like my number four is going to cause some people to scratch their heads.
All right. So, we'll post the link to that in the show notes for this podcast. And I'm looking forward into diving into your Game of Thrones list and seeing what was controversial on that spot.
Yeah. I feel like this will be more controversial than the Game of Thrones one. The Game of Thrones one was received pretty well. I think the thing with Game of Thrones and Walking Dead is both shows have ridiculously huge casts of characters. There's just like an enormous array of people on both shows. But I feel like there's a lot more like decisively strong characters on Game of Thrones than there are in Walking Dead. And I think Walking Dead in some regards is a more... It's almost a more subjective experience, I feel like, than Game of Thrones, if that makes any kind of sense. So I think that this is, I think this one will be a little bit more contested by the people who are big Walking Dead fans than the Game of Thrones one.
Although I feel like I'm looking through your list right now. I feel like that we could do a whole podcast on the top 30. I feel like you have some. I definitely disagree with your number one.
Ooh, okay. Well,
little tease for that list also.
No spoilers on that one. But a huge shout out to R. Philly, who is a great sounding board for my Walking Dead list.
Okay.
R. Philly was very helpful in that regard, even though he disagreed with some of my picks as well. So
okay.
If Philly can't change my mind, then nobody can.
Okay. All right. So where do you want to start our discussion of the halfway point of the Walking Dead season 7? We're at a interesting spot where hope has sprung here for the group. That's how they refer to them on The Talking Dead. They just always refer to them as the group.
The gang. Yeah. The gang goes to Alexandria.
Yeah.
It's always sunny in Alexandria. Where do we want to start? Well, how about The Talking Dead? Have you watched The Talking Dead? Is that really old hat by now? Do we not even need to mention The Talking Dead because we're so far removed from it at this point?
Yeah, I did watch it. I actually watched it today because we were going to be doing this, and I felt like it was fun, but not really super insightful or hilarious. They did have Norman Reedus, and they also had Spencer and Robert Kirkman. Was also there, and Kirkman is great. You know, they tend to have him a lot for finales on The Talking Dead. He's always really, really fun on the show, but Norman Reedus is like, while he's a fun guy, he's not really like super funny. And so, and then Spencer was, you know, sort of like, you know, what are you expecting from him?
Was he very sad to have left the show, or was he in good spirits?
He was sort of funny, like where he was talking about, the highlight was when he was talking about what it was like where he was out there shooting, and then it wasn't until he watched the show that he realized his character was an a-hole. So I think and he was sort of hoping that he was going to become like this great badass, and then ultimately that was not going to be his fate.
No, not at all. I've read some interviews with Austin Nichols who played Spencer in the aftermath of his exit, and I feel like he's been a champ about it. Like, I feel like he's been a really good sport about the fact that his character was a total douche. And really, the whole Monroe family, it did not go so well for this family. They are now fully gone. That makes me sad. But really, the only one that was still standing was a bit of a jerk. And it seems like the actor who played him understood that. So I appreciate that about him.
My quick rules for The Talking Dead is you shouldn't ever have more than one actor on at least one actor from the series. So I think that sort of the ideal combination is one, you know, comedian slash funny famous person. And, you know, in a perfect world, you have two funny famous people slash comedians. And then one person from the shows. But Kirkman, you know, sort of qualifies as a funny person. But you needed, you know, at least one other person there to bring some fun into this show. Spencer and Norman Reedus did not make for an, you know, amazing combination.
Was Norman Reedus at least like wearing actual clothes instead of like baggy sweatsuits or like the Larry the Cable Guy costume that he wore as he broke out of the sanctuary?
Yeah, he's there doing his Norman Reedus thing, or he's there like, what's going on right now? Like, you know, that he's good for like, you
what's
know,
wrong with Norman Reedus? Yeah. Does he know where he is?
Yeah. He's just sort of like, you know, half engaged with what's happening. Yeah.
How did I get here? Who brought me here? Who are you?
Wait, what's going on? Yeah, that is basically God. Like Norman Reedus on a talk show.
I feel like that's a great setup for like a Norman Reedus action movie. It's like, did you ever see Jackie Chan's Who Am I?
No.
No, Norman Reedus is Who Am I would be pretty good, where he just plays Norman Reedus, but he has amnesia and now he's being sought by all sorts of law enforcement agencies and he has to go on the run.
Yeah, I think that that would be pretty good. But I think that it would be like each time a bit of a setup, like, say what now? What am I doing?
Every Wait, time he's just like, it always resets that he's always confused at the top of each episode.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I think that's where you would go.
Wow, I think you're really discovering something here. The beginning of a true, really good Norman Reedus impersonation. Not get carried away. All right, well, let's get into the episode proper if you are good to go here.
I'm ready.
All right, Hearts Still Beating, the name of this episode, Rob. And I think that, I feel like when we talked about it with Alex Kidwell on the live show a few weeks back, I feel like in some regards, at least for me, I felt like it was the most hopeful I'd been about this show all season long. I've been kind of down on Walking Dead, to put it lightly, throughout the season. This was something that was sent our way on this topic from Anthony Tenorio, who wrote in and said, "Holy fat Tony, the ending of that episode had me teary-eyed and goose pimply. It's so nice to have Rick's, let's call them cojones, back in place and the group all together. Do you guys think it will centralize the story better and lead to cleaner, less jarring storytelling?" So, Rob, a couple of weeks out from this finale having aired, what do you feel about this? Do you still feel, or do you feel, optimistic about the second half of season 7? If the first half of season 7 was a little bit sluggish, if it was a little bit slow, if people weren't exactly pumped that, you know, characters were not crossing in and out of each other's stories a little bit more, that Rick was really under Negan's thumb and not ready to make a move, do you think that we are in a position to have a season that's going to correct some of those issues for the people who had problems with that stuff? Do you think that we are in for a better second half of season 7?
I think we might have a back half of the season where the characters are more on offense, but I think that people are going to be disappointed if they think that Walking Dead is going to really get away from this storytelling style where I think everybody might be together in the first episode and maybe even the second episode, but I'm pretty sure that when we get back to the kingdom, we're going to just be dealing with Carol and Morgan again. And I'm sure that we might have an episode where maybe it's just a couple of characters that are going to go to Oceanside with Tara for a summit.
Tara's second solo Oceanside episode.
Well, I think that she'll have other people with her when she goes back to Oceanside. But I think that that will probably be another standalone episode. So I think that we will probably continue to see confined storylines where maybe it won't be just one character, but I think that it will deal with, you know, another episode of Jess, Maggie, and Sasha, and Jesus at the hilltop. So I think that we'll probably go back to just like by location.
I think that's probably right. We got some feedback from Spencer Young, who speaks to this same point. Spencer writes in, "As exciting and compelling as the Rise Up promo clips showed the upcoming back half of season 7 to be, I'm familiar with Scott Gimple's drag out style of storytelling ever since he took on the showrunner position in season 4. Based on this formula, do not be shocked if middle episodes 11 through 14 end up with slow to little advancement of the plot to take down Negan and the Saviors." So first of all, that sounds about like what you are saying here, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we've seen a real pattern over these last three seasons. So I would be very surprised if we see a departure from that here in the back half of season 7.
Yeah, I think that that's probably right. I don't know. I think Walking Dead is probably like, it's probably 6 episodes too long every season. Like if every season was just 10 episodes, you'd get a really tight Walking Dead every year. Anyway, so Spencer had continued and said, "So what kind of filler episodes should we look forward to? Will we see flashbacks of the individual communities of the Hilltop, the Kingdom, and Oceanside before and just after running into the Saviors? Will we see Rick and company meeting and courting each community one episode at a time and facing resistance or pushback and joining up in the fight? Will we see the brown boots person wreaking havoc in Alexandria? Something else. What do you think, Rob? What is your, if you had to guess, this might be fun. If you had to guess, how would you sketch out the next 8 episodes of The Walking Dead? What is it going to look like? What is the roadmap for the second half of season 7 once we hit the ground?
Well, I think maybe if I had some more time to prepare, I could give you a beat by beat. But I do feel like that we are going to, you know, be starting up here in the Hilltop. And then obviously we need to send a contingent to the kingdom where we have to get Carol and Morgan back into the fold. That's an episode.
You got to imagine we do go back to Oceanside, whether it's just Tara or with other people. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about three right there. How many like sanctuary, like saviors devoted episodes do we get? Do we get the full court press Negan flashback in the back half of season 7?
I hope we do as one of these like 90-minute standalone episodes.
Yeah.
I think if I had to guess, I'd say it's 60-40 that we will at some point in season 7. So that would fill up a spot. And I think that we're going to probably have a moment where, you know, it looks like that we're going to have Rick and the group sort of go on offense. But I think that Negan needs to strike back. And I think we still need that beat in the story of where whatever plans they have, Negan finds out about them and then sort of like becomes like a real fly in the ointment in terms of what they're trying to do. So maybe Negan like kills somebody along the way. And then ultimately we have sort of like a climactic battle going into the end of season 7.
Yeah, where the, you know, the fates of everyone is completely up in the air, and you know, we're not going to be able to find out until October who actually got shot in the final battle. Something like that. I think that, you know, sort of the format is like the final two episodes of your half season tend to be linked. Like if you think back to the penultimate of season 7A, you know, that really does play directly into the mid-season finale. So I feel like you're going to get that like back-to-back final two episodes.
It's like a two-part episode. Right.
Right, right. That's going to be pretty accurate. Action-packed.
Yeah, I think that that's probably the case. And I think that we certainly seen a really then jam-packed part one of the back half of the season. I think that we'll see a really exciting premiere and then maybe 4 or 5 weeks of potentially, you know, slow down or some moving of the plot. And then finally, you know, sort of an action-packed episodes, you know, 7 and 8 or 15 and 16, depending on how you're looking at it.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. Well, we can always refer back in the future and see how close we were, but that sounds about right. No Tabitha the Goat in the second half. We're done with that. We're not going to go there.
I think we're probably have seen the last of probably Tabitha done. The Goat. Maybe that's if depressing. Tabitha the Goat has offspring or something like that.
What about the Sir Richard 90-minute flashback episode?
I don't think we'll flashback to Sir Richard, but I think that Sir Richard could be one of the people that gets off in the back half of season 7 as one of the, like, see what happens when you mess with Negan?
Yeah, I think, like, the moment you see, like, if there's a cold open with Sir Richard, if there's, like, a really heavy Sir Richard storyline, you know, happening in an episode, I think the smart move at that point is to, like, continue watching that episode, just bracing yourself for Sir Richard's inevitable demise. Like, that dude dies in the episode where he immediately gets the visibility spike.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, that's the thing.
That's one of the pieces of barbed wire that's wrapped around Lucille.
Yes, the Lucille is covered in visibility spike.
Indeed. Okay, so once again from Anthony Tenorio, and we actually just touched on this very, very briefly in Spencer's point. Anthony writes in, "Hey guys, any ideas as to who the mystery boot man was? I think it might be Dwight. He may have been the one to slip the note to Daryl, and now he's tracking the group to see what they're up to, but not for nefarious reasons, maybe to try and join them and help in the revolt against the Saviors. Seems that last kissy kiss with Share Bear may have pushed him over the edge." All right, well, that's Anthony's, first off, getting so formal with Sherry that we're calling her Share Bear, and also Anthony's theory about the mystery boots, man. But I would love to get some of your theories. Have you thought about this at all since the finale? Have you given any thought to who this person is? And just to set it up, since it has been a while, we do see at one point in the episode Rick and Aaron on the run. They've successfully made it through the Swamp of Sorrows. They are loading up their trunk, and there is somebody with their mysterious boots watching from a distance. And then in a post-credit scene, you see those same boots, and that person is watching Alexandria and runs away. Any idea who that person might be, Rob?
No, I don't think that I would have an idea, because to me, in my mind, that's a new character. And I think that we are awaiting an introduction to a new character. I don't think that there's going to be some reveal where it's like, oh, it was a person that we knew the whole time. I don't think we're getting like the Scooby-Doo moment with this person.
Right. Yeah. And I was trying to think of like, who could that be? And it would be like exciting. Like who could be, you know, who could have been missing for all this time? And then that person suddenly shows up and is back on the show, and you're so pumped to see that person. It's not Heath. Like, that's not going to be, if that's just Heath,
right,
that's going to be frustrating. Although maybe he's keeping his distance, Rob, because he broke his glasses and can't see.
Yeah.
So he's very cautious and, you know, reluctant to move forward into these communities that he thinks is Alexandria, but isn't 100% sure.
Right. And unless it's a Fear the Walking Dead character, I don't believe it's going to be anybody that we already know.
Oh, God. If it's Strand.
Yeah. Well, we talked about that on the final feedback show.
If it is, though, that would be the greatest possible outcome.
Yes. these are my boots.
I'd be very, very happy with Strand just suddenly showing up here in Alexandria for no reason. And he doesn't even need to talk about what happened to the Manawas. We could just assume.
Well, that'd be really exciting.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be really, really fun. And then maybe it would give Fear of the Walking Dead some juice, you know? Because how is Strand going to get separated and go hang out with the Grimeses? It's not a bad idea that we're discussing here right now.
Because the timeline of Fear of the Walking Dead to The Walking Dead, I mean, it's like, what, like 2 or 3 years later? So you could have, like, Strand at some point. I was like, okay, he's going to, you know, spend a year getting from Mexico to, sorry, I don't mean to spoil any of Fear of the Walking Dead for those of you who are not caught up. Yeah, I think that's certainly possible. I think it'd be a fun thing to do.
I think that'd be fun. And I was trying to think of, like, who else is out there? Who's still kicking? I think technically we never saw what happened to Shumpert. Do you remember Shumpert?
No.
Shumpert is one of the governor's, like, right-hand men who he's with at the end of season 3 after he's shot all of the people in Woodbury. And then he drives off with that guy. And Martinez, I believe, is the other guy. And that's the guy you see in the 2-part governor episodes in season 4. And he feeds him to a pit of walkers, and he's just like, yeah, Shumpert died, bro. Shumpert could still be out there, Rob. He could be the man in the boots.
He could still be out there, yeah. I mean, I would suspect it's somebody from the comics, and it's just going to be a reveal if you knew, you know, somebody, some character from the comics who has not yet been introduced on the TV show. I think that's the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. If that's the case, I'm a little bit puzzled. Maybe my recall on Walking Dead isn't as strong as it should be, but I would hesitate to know exactly who that character would be. It's kind of similar to how Jesus shows up in the comics, but Jesus is already on the show. So it's not going to be the same guy. So Walking Dead loves to remix things from the comics. They like to give people's iconic moments to other characters, and very rarely do the things actually line up. So they're kind of taking this kind of, you know, this first sighting of Jesus and probably applying it either to a completely new character, a character that is still alive that we don't know about, somebody from the comics that I'm not guessing, who knows. But your guess is really as good as mine on this one.
Yeah. No, I don't know who that person is, and maybe we will get some answers with the first half of season 7, but I would not bet on it.
I would love for it to be the governor. Wouldn't that be great? And it just turned out that, like, he just got very, very badly injured, but he somehow walked away from the prison alive.
I'm back. You forgot to pay the bill.
Yes, so you walked out on the bill.
Yeah. Would it be too controversial to bring him back from the dead, to bring the governor back? Like, could we do the Tony Almeida on the governor?
Well, now, didn't Tyrese see the governor in his, like, life flashing before his eyes? Is that not canon that he was visited by ghosts?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we would have to draw the line in the sand. Like, now you would have to decide that those ghost sightings were purely metaphor, and that there aren't actual spirits that exist in the world of The Walking Dead. You'd have to become okay with that in order for this governor thing come back to work out.
Yeah.
It's a tough sacrifice to ask.
Too bad. I feel like that's the only thing standing in our way for this.
I loved Ghost Governor. Yeah, it'd be great. What if the man, the mystery boot man, is Ghost Governor and no one can see him, but he can haunt Alexandria?
I'm back. Now we really start.
Yeah, now we really start getting into sort of the ghost mythology of The Walking Dead universe.
What's scarier, ghosts or walkers?
I don't know.
Yeah,
ghosts could be frightening. Governor ghost is really scary.
Like, when Spencer, he dies, does he become a ghost, or not until you kill off Walker Spencer?
Oh, so if you kill the walker, then the spirit dies as well.
Or do they not become a spirit until the walker is killed?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah. And
once you kill the walker, you free the spirit.
Yes.
Interesting. But if maybe it's the spirit is trapped on Earth if the walker form still exists, and then you kill the walker And then it's like the end of Ghost and Patrick Swayze can move on.
Go to the light, Carol Ann. Go to the light.
I love Unchained Melody.
Yes.
I'm Henry the Eighth. I am.
Yeah.
It's not.
All right. So, like,
not your train.
You like trains?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think so. All right. Well, Ghost Governor is a good idea to file away for future use. All right. Let's move away from this topic. Already had some hot takes about Carl Grimes earlier in this podcast. Here is another from Daniel Monk, who writes in, can I please punch Carl in the face and on the follow through also connect with Enid? Are they the most unnecessary part of the first half of season 7? I already have anger management issues and watching them sends me into a rage. Hashtag roller skate road rage. Daniel, get that checked out. Mm-hmm. You know, work on that. It's just a character. But you're also not wrong.
Yeah. I mean, but is that justified coming out of the finale episode? I mean, did Carl really have that much airtime or Enid?
Yeah, I don't really know what Carl and Enid did in this episode
specifically. Really, episode 7 was really the bigger Carl episode.
Maybe roller skate road rage is like something that really takes a couple of weeks to develop. Like you don't really understand the full extent of how angry you are until a few weeks removed from that episode airing. And if that's the case, then I understand Daniel's fury.
I get it. You know, Carl and Enid are pretty insufferable. That I think I would have had Carl in the top 30 characters.
Though. It wouldn't have been honest. It wouldn't have been honest. I challenge you to look at the list of every single character on The Walking Dead and you with a straight face telling me that Carl Grimes hits the top 30.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I wouldn't believe it from you.
But in terms of Enid, no, I've been long saying that, you know, Enid is pretty terrible. And, you know, she JSS is and she's still here. But no, I'm not an Enid fan.
JDSS just don't survive somehow. Right.
That would be perfect if somehow that was the case.
That'd be great. All right. Rob Craig wants to float out a different character as the most disliked character on the show right
Who's
now.
Who's that?
From Rob Craig, has Rosita replaced Spencer as the most disliked character on the show?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, here's his case. She was a total douche to Eugene, trying to get him make the bullet for her, and she had an absolutely horrible plan to try to kill Negan. She was in the lineup when Glenn and Abraham died, so she has already seen that Negan will kill someone else. She manages to take her shot at Negan from pretty close range and hits his bat, which causes Olivia to die and poor Eugene to be taken by Negan for some dog food sandwiches and some Easy Street. And oh yeah, she slept with Spencer too. This might be Andrea 2.0 for me, says Rob Craig. I can't begrudge her Spencer. Spencer was an attractive man. Very, you know, very compelling on in that front. And slim pickings in the apocalypse anyway. That aside, how mad are you at Rosita? Are you as mad as the other Rob C, or are you not so mad?
No, I'm not so mad at Rosita. I don't really have a lot of anger towards her. I mean, I wish she was nicer to Eugene, but, you know, Rosita's had to deal with a lot of crap. So I totally understand her motivation. Her plan was bad, but I think that probably her aim was more of the question than her plan. I mean, hey, I'll shoot Negan at close range. I mean, he's just like grandstanding here in the middle of Alexandria. I mean, it seemed like a solid plan. It was the best plan of all the plans to kill Negan. That being said, her aim, highly questionable.
Yeah. Her aim was true, but not true enough.
Not true enough. Sadly.
Yes.
Sadly. What is true, Josh? I want to take
this
a moment.
A pretty good segue,
yes.
Right? This is not bad.
And thank our sponsor. Actually, our first ever sponsored ad read in the history of post-show recaps. Momentous event here.
Do you have a bell nearby? Can you give us a ding?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Look at us. We're all grown up. I feel like I can see the first few hairs on my chest.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Man today.
And on that note, this episode of the podcast is sponsored by our friends over at True Car. Now, Josh, it is rather easy to get your hands on a vehicle in the world of The Walking Dead.
Easy Street.
Yes, you could be driving on Easy Street. Now, surely there is still some hassle. Typically, there is a walker that's been in there for, 2-3 years? And there's not always gas
you're going to want to hope that you've like run into like one of those Walmarts and they've got like a good supply of pine scent air freshener. Like you need to really load up on that stuff if you're going to get one of these zombie cars. It's going
to
stink.
Yes. Now that's one way to get a used car, but here in our world, it is a lot easier to get your hands on a used car with TrueCar, because in fact, there are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. Whether you're looking to buy new or used, you can get upfront pricing information that empowers discounts off the list price for used cars and a better buying experience through the TrueCar certified dealer network. You can see what other people paid for the car, so you know what a fair price is and feel confident. You won't feel like you're getting ripped off like all these people who have to deal with Negan.
Yeah, or just the people who are getting ripped apart by zombies.
certainly.
Their arms are getting ripped off.
And with TrueCar, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing, so you enjoy a quick, easy buying experience. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the new or used car that you want. And there's over 13,000 TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. That's only a few more characters that are on The Walking Dead, Josh.
Oh, my God. This is great timing that we're talking about TrueCar, because you and I offline have been talking about going in on a Winnebago together and driving it all over the country in reverse to do live Walking Dead shows everywhere. So I feel like this is great. Like, we should really use this to our benefit.
Yeah. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. All right, Josh, what's up next on the feedback?
All right. Well, let's get away from Rosita. Although really quickly on Rosita, Vicky from California had a grievance about Rosita and said, why didn't any of the saviors shoot Rosita after she shot at Negan? Would they have been happy that Negan was shot? So that could be a reason that they wouldn't have taken her out. Or are these just the robotic types of savior workers that only do what Negan orders them to do? Rob, why was Rosita able to just like walk away? I was about to say unscathed, but now she has a really cool G.I. Joe scar under her eye. But other than that, why was she able to just walk away? This is just Negan's thing.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't kill like the actual offender.
Negan, he works in mysterious ways. Like if you actually try to do something bad, he doesn't get mad at you. He just takes it out on somebody else.
Yeah, it's very, very unfair. I'm still upset about Olivia. Who is not a top 30 character.
Mm-hmm.
I will say is not Olivia.
Yes, I could see that. Now, yeah. She was a top 30 character for Rick, where after he saw her get killed, then he's like, you know what? I've had enough.
Yeah, I had Olivia at number 16 on my list. I thought it was respectable, probably a little higher than most people would have her.
Right.
Yeah, he was a big Olivia fan. But I don't know, Rosita gets to walk away and she has, you know, now she has like more grudges to nurse. Like, do you think that this botched attempt at vengeance has like calmed her fury? Or do you think that this is going to make her even more foolhardy in the future?
I think that everybody is now on the same page that they have bloodlust for Negan.
But like blind bloodlust, like just like pure white hot rage? Or are they going to be smarter about this because the white hot style is what got Eugene locked up and Olivia shot in the face?
I think that what was going on there was that everybody was trying to like come up with these capers behind Rick's back. And now, hopefully, with Rick as the manager of the group, they could all be working together in conjunction on one grand plan to take out Negan. One plan that involves the Hilltop and Oceanside and the Kingdom. And everybody working, you know, in the same way to take out Negan, as opposed to just random people just trying to assassinate him.
Yeah. And I think that things are going to get better for the group, too, in regards to capers, because Spencer had been hoarding them all.
Yes.
He's been hoarding all of the capers with his club crackers. And now that he's gone, you know, the jig is up. Everyone's got capers. It's going to be Capers Thursdays in Alexandria moving forward.
Yes, there's a whole stockpile just waiting to be distributed.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. It's not as sexy as Spaghetti Tuesday as Caper Thursday. Like, that's gonna get old pretty fast. You're gonna have like 10 capers. You're like, this is a lot.
It's a lot to handle.
A lot of capers. Let's move away from Rosita and talk about a different character who has been squaring off with Negan in his own way. And that's Daryl Dixon. First off, from Rob Craig, before he went Joey Bats on Fat Joey's skull, Daryl took the time to crush a jar of peanut butter. Do you think Daryl is a creamy or a crunchy guy? What's your guess? And just to establish the stakes, Rob and I are on opposite ends of the battlefield when it comes to peanut butter.
Yeah, I think Daryl is a crunchy guy. Everything so about Daryl screams crunchy.
Earthy, crunchy peanut butter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're going to let me have Daryl Dixon in the peanut butter war.
You can take him.
Yeah. Do you get anybody? Is anyone a creamy peanut butter person on The Walking Dead, do you think?
Eugene?
Eugene, I feel like, is a crunchy guy.
Okay. I don't know. What about maybe Carl?
Yeah, you can have Carl. Yeah, he can be in your top 30 and he can be in your smooth peanut butter club.
Yeah. I hear Judith has a peanut allergy.
Probably true.
You can't have
because I heard Shane had one as well. Mm-hmm. So
that's interesting.
Pass from the father.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Did the peanut butter scene, that seemed just like filler to me. I don't know why we necessarily needed to see Daryl eating peanut butter before he escaped.
I don't know. He just needed a little bit of nourishment. I mean, I don't know. He'd been subsisting on dog food sandwiches for so long, and then he just like goes hog wild on a jar of peanut butter. I feel like that can't be a great combination. I worry about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the theoretical mouthfeel of that is just terrible. Just thinking about it, like it does not feel like it would digest well, yeah. But it also feels like it really suits Daryl's really grungy MO this season.
Right.
The sloppiest of sloppers.
I just kind of think if you're Daryl and you're trying to pull off this really sneaky escape from the Negan compound, maybe you don't want hands that are completely covered in peanut butter. I feel like that's going to make you sort of pretty easy to track throughout the compound. Especially
yeah, you're Hansel and Gretel yourself all over the compound. They're going to follow your trail of little peanut crumbs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, now imagine you got to like open a doorknob at some point. Like, it's going to be, I think I would have just put that jar of peanut butter in my pocket and then, saved it for later.
Yeah. You can eat later.
Yeah.
This is probably not the time. Not the time or place. It's going to be all sticky in your mouth. And like, what if you have to whistle at somebody? You're not going to be able to whistle.
Mm-hmm.
It's not great. More on Daryl from Spencer Young. As Daryl was escaping the sanctuary, should it be alarming to viewers to see him angrily hitting things in the room where he was having his peanut butter snack and changing into new clothes, followed by his deadly beatdown of Fat Joseph? Has Daryl's captivity psychologically broken him down and turned him into a darker person, or were his actions just his way of venting out his frustrations about his imprisonment and torture? Do you think Daryl will suffer any PTSD from his time at the sanctuary, and will this emerge as a subplot in the back half of the season? Also, was it a missed opportunity to not show Daryl and Maggie having a conversation about Daryl's role in Glenn's death, or is this scene still forthcoming? To take that second, that final point, I think we'll get something like that in the second half of season 7, right? Like, you're going to get some sort of scene with Daryl and Maggie where she's like, it's not your fault. You didn't do it. Glenn loved you.
Maggie will forgive Daryl.
Of course, right? She's, you know, she loves Daryl.
Yeah, I think she will. I think that it's probably weighing on Daryl's mind. Norman Reedus said on The Talking Dead that he hopes Maggie will forgive Daryl about this. So
I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried about that. That's going to be fine. That's going to be a really touching scene. He's going to cry a lot, like, you know, how he does. And Maggie's going to kiss his head and he's going to be happy and everyone's going to be okay.
I feel like that there's not a ton of blame that people have in The Walking Dead. A lot of stuff happens other than Spencer. I feel like that there's not too many people that hold other members of the group accountable for things.
It's probably true. And I don't think Daryl is going to be held accountable for this. I think they're just going to be grateful that Daryl is back. And they'll probably assume you were in, like, anyone who's angry at Daryl, it's going to be you were in Negan's custody for at least 3 days. You've learned your lesson.
Yes. I think he's served his penance.
Yeah. His 3-day detention period, I think, has really taught him some lessons. But to Spencer's point, are we worried about Daryl's psyche? Like, the bloodlust against Fat Joseph, was that too much? Is this a Daryl that we will not recognize moving forward? Or do you think that he's going to be pretty okay pretty soon?
I do think that Daryl is going to be one of the leaders of the we got to do something movement. You know, I think that we did see Daryl a little bit more of a pacifist at different points in season 6 specifically. I think that you saw him out on the trail with Aaron. He didn't always want to get into fights with other people. you know, I think that he's probably changed to be a more aggressive and more badass version of Daryl here in the back half of season 7.
All right. Well, speaking of badass, Rob, we got a very serious amount of feedback from a listener named Bradass TV.
Yes.
Bradass TV had written in like a dissertation on the character of Negan and why Negan is a problematic character this season, which I think is something that you and I have batted around back and forth. I think you're a little more pro Negan than I am. At least as a character.
Yes. You always have to bat things around with Negan.
You know, so I think that's, he likes it that way. Well, he doesn't like to bat things around, but Lucille, on the other hand, she loves to bat things around. So we would be here for another, you know, 30 minutes if we read the whole thing. But some of the points of Bradass TV's feedback was that doesn't feel like Negan is physically imposing enough. The JDM, that Jeffrey Dean Morgan, perhaps a little slim for the role of Negan. Do you feel that at all, Rob?
Is he too slim? No, that wasn't necessarily something that I was thinking. I will say that at the point where Negan takes his leather jacket off and he's sort of just like sitting on the porch in a t-shirt, not super imposing, the Negan outside of the leather jacket and ascot, which is the traditional Negan look. So
yeah, little ascot.
Yeah, I could see it, but I think that probably still imposing.
This was another grievance against Negan. He keeps surrounding himself with idiots and people who are incentivized to hold a grudge against him.
Yeah,
that feels correct. You know, he keeps Daryl alive. He's interested in converting Daryl. He has he chose Team Rick over Team Spencer. He chose a guy who has been actively, you know, very badly humiliated in front of all of his people by Negan instead of this guy who is very much saying, I will do whatever you want. So he has chosen Rick over Spencer. He's kept Dwight alive. Dwight clearly is not the biggest Negan fan. So is this a reason to be annoyed with Negan, that he keeps people who have every reason to want him dead way too close to the inner circle?
No, I don't think that you necessarily, that's a reason to be mad at Negan, but it is curious on Negan's part. I mean, it seems like he is playing with fire to some degree, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's very controversial decision making here to keep all these people alive. Another point of Bradass TV is that he keeps the leaders of the places that he conquers alive. And I get that he doesn't want to turn like Rick Grimes into a martyr or anything. And I guess maybe Oceanside is the example of that, where he kills all of the men in the group and the women suddenly leave. But I don't know. I feel like it just feels questionable. Feels questionable to me.
Yeah, definitely. The Negan cabinet picks have been head scratchers, to say the least.
Yeah, to say the least. And then this was one more grievance from Bradass TV. I'll read this one in full. Final point on Negan, writes Bradass TV. Have you noticed that he is a close talker?
Oh,
he's constantly in Rick's face, totally exposed. And in the past, we've literally seen Rick bite someone's throat out. So maybe he's afraid of what the others will do. But we had a point where Rick and Negan were alone in the pantry and Rick had every opportunity to take him out right there, even before Negan and company could get any of their guns. I believe that means that Bradass TV is advocating for Rick to have bitten out Negan's throat a couple of episodes back.
Yeah, I think Negan's thing is that he just wants to keep pushing the boundaries. He's going to find the line. He's going to walk over the line. He's going to just, you know, keep pushing until you eventually snap. But then he likes it when you snap.
Yeah, he does. He loves the snap. And someone else will get punished for you snapping.
Yes, yes. But he's just going to, he wants to know where your line is. Like, he's always just like poking and prodding and wants to see what is ultimately going to be the thing that makes you snap.
Yeah. Anyway, so those are the grievances about Negan. It is the holiday season,
it is
Rob.
Festivus.
It is Festivus. Festivegan, where you eat vegan meals with Negan and air your grievances about stuff. I don't know.
Is this spaghetti vegan?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, it's going to smell later. All right. We've got a bunch of voicemails before we close out here. First, we cannot play these voicemails. We have two from Steve Davis, our good friend Steve Davis. Sadly, Rob, his cell service is just not happening where Steve Davis is currently stationed. Okay. So that's not going to work out. But the gist of one of the voicemails that I could actually hear from Steve Davis is that he wanted to know if you and I had noticed that Jesus took a radio from Fat Joseph's body, and will that come in handy in the future?
Yeah, I think that that's interesting. They do have a walkie-talkie now, and so maybe they could be eavesdropping on Negan and getting the jump on his positioning.
Yeah, so maybe. I like that. That could be useful in the future. This from Jessica Frey, who wants to ask about a certain character who we really did not see nearly enough of in Season 7, and how soon are we going to see this character return to the fold?
Hi, Rob and Josh. It's Jessica Frey, and I have a prediction for you guys to make. Do you think we'll see Carol reunite with the group in the premiere, or will we have to wait longer for her to reunite? Because she still doesn't even know that Glenn and Abraham are dead. Thanks, bye.
Yeah, I got to break that news to Carol.
Gonna have to break that news to Carol. She's gonna take it pretty hard. When are we getting Carol back? Is it the first episode back? Second episode back? Can't be like seventh episode back.
No, it can't be seventh episode. But based on the pacing concerns that you and I were discussing earlier, it would be very surprising if they got that out of the way in episode number one.
I think probably, hey, look, if they do, that's fantastic. You know, if that's where we're going.
I love that. I would love that.
I would love that. I would be 30% more attracted to The Walking Dead if it did that. Yeah, I think that'd be great, right? Like, that would be a sign of a season that means to make some moves, to move a little quicker than the first half of the season. So I'd be thrilled about that. That'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be very exciting. And we could put that on our holiday wish list.
Okay, yeah, we'll work on that. This voicemail from Richard, who wants to talk about somebody who is about to enter Dwight's life, potentially in a very traumatic way.
Hi, Rob, Josh, and Alex. This is Richard with a pressing question for the second half of Season 7 of Walking Dead. How do you think Dwight is going to react when he sees Eugene and his jaws of death show up at his front door? This is not going to be good news for Eugene, right?
Well, I mean, if
I forgot about that.
If we're looking at the track record, this is going to be bad news for Dwight. Like, I mean, Eugene's jaws are the defending champion in this battle.
Yeah. So I don't know if he's going to be getting some dog food sandwiches. It did seem like Dwight took a little bit of a liking to Daryl eventually, but I don't think he's going to like Eugene.
Yeah, I don't think this is the kind of thing that you just like forgive and forget. Like that was a very personal first encounter between these two guys. But I hadn't really thought about it. You know, we were talking a bit on the live show, at least as far as I recall, about Eugene and Negan and like what those scenes could look like. And that could potentially be pretty fun. But I think that we'd forgotten that there's actually this history between Dwight and Eugene. And you got to imagine that there's at least a scene between these two. That's got to be pretty good.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a scene to look forward to in the second half of Season 7.
Yeah, I think we're primed for some classic Eugene at that point where he's like, I'm sorry that I bit you in your genitals. It was a necessary self-defense tactic that I had to employ on you.
Yeah, he's going to really over-explain why he took a bite out of Dwight.
I hope I did not do any permanent damage to your reproductive system. But I was in a fight-or-flight mode, and your gonads were in an appropriate place for me to target.
In order to become a stage two badass, I had to bite your number one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to Eugene with the Saviors. That's one of the things, like, if I were to list out, like, the top five things I'm looking forward to in the second half of Season 7, I feel like Eugene with the Saviors, that would have to make the
list. Right. And I think that Eugene, one of the best things about him is he can make it so awkward that Dwight is like, all right, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Final point. We'll wrap up with one last voicemail. This is from Michael, who wants to talk a little bit about Negan's methods of conquering communities and what would happen if another community that is no longer around were still in the mix.
Hey, guys, this is Michael from Pasadena calling. And I have a fun fan fiction for you to play out. Seeing Negan visiting Alexandria and watching how his and Rick's relationship has developed over the last few episodes, it got me wondering, how would the governor have reacted to Negan? If the Saviors rolled up on Woodbury and Lucille met Merle in a grisly encounter, how would the governor have handled that? And how would it have played out differently than how things are going here? You know, when you see Negan just standing outside the gate, you just can't help but think, like, just what if somebody just killed him? What would happen next? And I think the governor seems a little bit more impulsive and caring less about his people than Rick. So how do you think it would play out? All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Yeah, this is a great question.
The return of Ghost Governor.
The Ghost Governor, where Negan rolls up and is like, okay, oh, what are you, a pirate? Ha, I like that. Take off that eye patch for me. Let me see what's under that eye.
You're a freaking governor? Did your people hold an election? That is freaking too cool.
You've got all these heads in a fish tank. I like that. I like that fish a lot.
I'm not a big fan of fish, but Lucille loves fish. The band, not the animal.
Yeah. You're going to give me half of your crap.
I can't pay that bill. That's too high of a bill.
Way too expensive
for me to pay.
Yeah. I feel like history gives us the answer. The governor just shot his own people.
Yeah.
You know, so he's going to get his people killed. And like the next time that the governor had people, he got all of them killed very impulsively. So, yeah, I would not expect the governor to handle this meeting very well. And I think that this would be one of the times that Negan would really have to wipe out a huge chunk of this community. Like he couldn't leave the governor alive the way he's left Rick alive.
Right. It's almost like an interesting strategy for Rick to sort of get one of these less reasonable groups onto the saviors, where like, where are the wolves? Where are they at? You know, could right. you create some problems, like sort of like destabilize the region and get the wolves at war with the saviors and then be able to move in?
Yeah. Look at that W on your forehead. What does that stand for, weirdo?
Yeah, that would be ideal if you could get some of these other, you know, sort of like if the Terminus group was still in the mix, get them sort of like,
oh, you guys freaking eat people?
That is some weird stuff.
Oh, my God. Is it true that you can't go back after you eat the taste of human meat?
What's in these meatballs? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Actual people? Yeah, I would love to have seen Negan come into contact with some of these communities, like him versus the Vatos back in season one. Remember them?
Yeah.
You guys are protecting old people?
And you're not even related to them?
So
you are a good group of humans.
I like that.
I like that. But Lucille hates the
she
elderly.
Hates that. You ever see that movie Logan's Run? Lucille loves that movie.
Are you guys going to see Logan when it comes out in a few months? It's the last Wolverine movie. And I'm a fan, but Lucille's ready to see Hugh Jackman retire.
She thinks he's gotten too old.
All right. Josh, why don't we leave it there? Our final Walking Dead podcast of 2016. What a ride it's been.
What a ride it's been. Did you know that in an alternate universe, Rob, that the actor who played Thomas Abigail in Fear the Walking Dead, Doug Ray Scott, was originally going to play Wolverine before Hugh Jackman won?
Oh.
Did you know that? He dropped out in the very last minute before shooting on Bryan Singer's first X-Men movie began. And Hugh Jackman, random Australian dude, was called in the 11th hour, and the rest is history.
Wow.
Doug Ray Scott went to Fear the Walking Dead, and Hugh Jackman is about to wrap up a 17-year run on Wolverine as a character.
Yeah, and Hugh Jackman could have been Strand's boyfriend on Fear the Walking Dead, imagine.
I mean, how much better is that show?
Yes.
With Hugh Jackman. That's great.
Wow, who knew?
Who knew?
Such a crazy sliding doors moment.
Yeah, I like the other universe because Hugh Jackman hasn't cut his hair. I don't know. That was some sort of Gwyneth Paltrow cuts her hair in one universe and doesn't in the other in Sliding Doors difference.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Josh, what's the hashtag today? Is it controversial? Is it Ghost Governor?
I liked Ghost Governor quite a bit.
Which do you like more?
Either one is fine by me. You take the pick. I don't want to make a controversial call here.
Yeah, let's do controversial.
Okay.
Okay. And let us know which of Josh's list you think is ultimately the more controversial.
I'm ready for people to not feel this Walking Dead one. I'm prepared for it.
Okay.
You know, it's very subjective stuff.
Okay. All right. Well, great stuff. You can follow everything that Josh is doing. All of these lists, everything else that Josh is doing for The Hollywood Reporter at Round Howard. I'm at Rob Cisternino. Of course, we love to get your comments on postshowrecaps.com. And then we'll be back with our Walking Dead recaps come February when The Walking Dead Season 7 returns. Until then, Walking Dead fans, Happy New Year. And we will talk to you in 2017. Take care. Bye.